find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Blink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. My website is thinklink.com, thinklink.com. When you're there, don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. And hey, if you've missed a radio show, just click on the podcast button and you can catch all of your Elise Glink favorites. And don't forget, while you're at it, to check out CBS News Money Watch. We've been posting really popular stuff this month. We've got your top 10, I think it's top 10 paint colors for the year. We've got your top 10 countries to live and work in. And a new post that just went up this week, the worst mannered cities in the country. Places to go where people are so rude, you may not want to live next door to them. Anyway, that's become a very popular post online, much to my chagrin, I have to say. And then finally, over at the Equifax Finance blog this week, we have all kinds of great information about the five pillars of personal finance, plus our new section on family finance, what you need to know to get your family's money in shape this year. Well, I don't know if you can hear the rustling of papers going on behind me. Everybody rustle away. But today is the official, that's very good, okay. Well, today's the official beginning of tax season. Well, actually, that's not true. The IRS opened up for business in January, but in our studio today, we have Bill Nemeth, enrolled agent, president of until June of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Chet Burgess, also an enrolled agent, executive director of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. And Mary Brody, an enrolled agent. And they have been our guests many times before. So for me, this is kind of the official beginning of tax season. Lady and gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, I know that everybody has been hard at work getting their tax filings in order. Sam has been asking me for documents like every other day. Thankfully, he has access to our Sure Payroll, so he can just go in and download the W-2s and the 1099s and all the other stuff. But he's constantly asking me for receipts. We got our business tax forms off. Those were due March 15th, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah,
Thursday.
March 15th.
This Thursday.
A couple of weeks ago. So we have to make sure that if you didn't get that in, that you get that in pretty quickly. But now it's time for us to get in really deep on what's going on with our own personal returns. Those are due April 15th this year?
17th.
April 17th. We get two extra days. I want to start by just kind of jumping in and saying, you know, what's new for Georgia? What's new nationally? You know, when Bill was on the show end of the year, we talked about how it was a pretty quiet end of the year. We weren't seeing the same kind of massive tax write-ups and legislation, and everybody staying late to get that stuff passed. And then, so all that stuff didn't happen. But let's jump in and see, because I think there have been a few changes for Georgia.
Well, right now, Georgia, a couple years ago, Sonny Perdue's parting comment to us was a very enhanced Georgia retirement exclusion. Just to reiterate, anyone 62 years or older today qualifies for a exclusion from income at the Georgia level, up to $4,000 of their earned income, up to $35,000 of their total income, and none of their federally taxable Social Security is taxed in Georgia. But kicking in this year is the brand new Sonny Perdue gift. Up to $65,000 of your income is not taxed for Georgia residents in 2012, and that's when you're 65 or over. And this goes gradually up to all of your unearned income in 2016. So basically, it's almost like living in Florida with lower sales tax.
So this is kind of interesting, because clearly this is a play to make Georgia your retirement state. And you got to compete with other sun states that are around us, notably Florida. But this is just, I want to be clear, unearned income, not earned income. So if you're working at a job, that still gets taxed.
That is correct. And only the first $4,000 is excluded from your earned income.
Okay. How many people do you think will qualify for this? And what kind of numbers are we looking at?
Personally, I think they're huge because, number one, this is kind of one of those things nobody knows about. And I continue to be amazed when we mention on the show about the Georgia seniors or the retirement exclusion, and my phone lights up for 2 weeks with people wanting to amend the last 3 years because they missed it.
Wow.
Right. And it also starts at age 62, not age 65 or 66, which also throws some people.
You know, that's interesting because you said 65,000 is not taxed. And in my head, I heard 65 years of age or older, but it's 62.
Absolutely.
Follows Social Security instead, which is the earliest age that you can take Social Security. So what kind of unearned income are we talking about? This is stock dividends. This is Social Security income. What is this?
Well, it's interest. It's dividends. It's all of the distributions out of your IRA. It's the 401k distributions. It's any sort of military retirement. It's all, if you're a partner in a partnership or a subchapter S corporation, include profits from those too.
Wow. So you could have a business that's an LLC, which flows directly to you, that would count or not count?
As long as it was taxed as an S-Corp, yes. It would flow to you personally on a K-1, and that income would then be subject to this exclusion for Georgia tax.
Although there was a bill in the General Assembly this year that would have exempted S-Corporation and partnership distributions from that exclusion, and I don't know the status of that bill, whether it's been passed or killed or what at this point. We'll know in the next couple of weeks.
Well, I can't imagine they're going to pass that, but who knows? It's a crazy election year. Anything could happen, as we all know. Okay, so the big thing here for seniors, that's good. Any other good tax news for anybody under the age of 62?
Well, I don't know if it's good news, but you mentioned on the national front, anyone who has stocks and bonds or mutual funds and sold a few last year, who's already opened their broker statement, they've probably said, what are all these numbers on the broker 1099? And then if they've opened the tax booklet, they probably said, what did they do to the Schedule D?
And, what did they do this?
Well, they completely changed it. The first thing they did was they created a brand new form, 8949, and you now have to enter all your stock and bond and mutual fund and real estate sales potentially on the form 8949, and then you have to add up the numbers on the 8949 and carry them over to the completely redesigned Schedule D. But, as they say on the infomercials, wait, there's more.
Ooh, and a set of Ginzu knives if you do it correctly the
first
time.
That's right. You can have on your return not one Form 8949, not two, but potentially three.
How is that possible?
Well, you have to sort all of your sales. Let's deal with the broker 1099, stocks, bonds, mutual funds.
Okay.
You have to classify them into sales where the broker reported the original cost, the basis of the security, on the 1099, and that basis is correct. You have to have a second form, 8949, if the broker reported the cost of the stock and the cost was not correct. And then you have to indicate on the 8949 what adjustments you made in which direction. The third form, 8949, will be for any asset you sold that you don't have a 1099 telling you what the basis was.
I want to cry now. Did you say this might be good news? You didn't really mean that.
No,
you were just.
I know. I said it probably wasn't. But yeah. Anybody who usually has several entries on a Schedule D every year, this year, if they're doing their own taxes and they haven't opened the book or the 1099 yet, they're in for a major surprise.
I'm feeling surprised, and I'm just hearing about this now. But of course, I'm sure TurboTax and MacinTax and all these other ones, they've actually got this all covered, right? Hopefully.
Well, I've dealt with questions from two people who were on TurboTax so far this season who had run into it and didn't know what the heck to do, and I referred them to our Find a Georgia EA website to get some help.
Oh, my goodness.
And there is just one other little caveat there.
Yeah.
Sometimes the broker doesn't know what the basis is.
Right.
And although the report is made to the IRS without that basis, unless the taxpayer is savvy enough to go through line by line and see if it's there, they may just pick up the numbers that the broker gave them, and they're going to cheat themselves out of some money.
They potentially could. And there are other info, too. The form now requires either the ticker symbol or the CUSIP number for each security. And about half the brokers' statements I've seen thus far are not reporting that yet.
That is so interesting. So, of course, they're going to start tracking it by the trading numbers, the ticker symbol.
Yeah, and I guess the idea eventually, the theory is they're going to catch a lot of this unreported income we keep hearing about eventually by matching up, doing a better job matching what's on the tax return with what's on the broker reports. I'm skeptical. I'll be stunned if the additional revenue to the government exceeds the additional cost to the taxpayers and the financial services industry to comply with this.
Well, that's a good question. Well, right. So how much does it cost, do you know? Do you know how much? Do you have any guess as to how much they're spending on it?
I have no idea what the financial what the brokers have had to spend to produce these. To reprogram.
I would like to comment that when I'm going through a broker statement prior to 2011, there was this sheet that had in big bold letters, "This information is not being reported to the IRS." And I would point out to people, this is the sheet that you can use to cheat if you're not honest, because it showed what their profit or loss was, and that wasn't being given to the IRS. So they could be as creative as they chose to be.
But not
anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they stopped that.
Well, that's actually a really good get. I mean, the idea that you've got this 8949 form that you got to, you may potentially have to include three of them, which could be a big miss. I think that's kind of big. What other national stuff? I mean, this is 2012. This is the big year that, you know, everybody was supposed to maybe die, right? You know, because it's still, from 2010, we carried it over to 2012. Like, if you wanted to pass unlimited amounts of wealth down, you could do it this year. This is your last year.
But according to the Mayan calendar, that's not going to happen until after the extension deadline.
Oh, shoot. I thought it was 2012. Okay, so where are we with sort of estate tax issues?
Your guess is as good as ours.
Yeah. The legislature.
There is no current law?
Well, no, there is a current law. You know, the $5 million estate tax exemption.
Mm-hmm.
You have portability of the exemption amount between spouses for the rest of this year only. You know, if the first spouse to die doesn't use the entire exemption, the other spouse can pick it up when the spouse dies later. But, of course, if somebody dies this year and a second spouse lives into 2013, we really have no idea what the law is going to be in 2013, and the expectation is there won't be anything serious done on the tax code during the campaign season.
Right. Yeah, there's just no way anything could be done. You'd have to promise. The last time we had something big in the tax code done in an election year that I can recall that was really significant is when I think it was Bob Dole was running against Clinton and proposed the $250,000 tax-free exclusion if you sold your home. That's the last really huge one that I can remember that was used as a wedge, a voting wedge. Can you guys think of another one?
Well, it's funny, you know, that $250,000 amount is a wedge issue this year. in a different form.
That's right.
Yeah, I've had to explain to a number of taxpayers this year why, you know, they're paying more. Young married couples who've had kids and thought they were going to get the child tax credit and a big exclusion for their daycare expenses, and they end up owing money. And I've had two or three people this year when I've been talking with them say, but we don't earn $250,000. We're not rich. And
listen,
many people don't realize there are a lot of those phase-outs and backdoor tax increases that hit people way below $250,000 income.
Well, we're definitely going to talk that when we come back. I'm Elise Klink. We are having a tax show today. Bill, Mary, and Chet, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, live on Sundays here 11 to 1, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinklink.com, thinklink.com. We are having a tax show today. Bill Nemeth, an enrolled agent, president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Chet Burgess, also an enrolled agent. He's executive director of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Mary Brody, also an enrolled agent, and she's with TaxDoctorInc.com. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation about some of these backdoor hidden taxes that are hitting families earning around $250,000. We're going to talk a little bit more about other exclusions that you might find and some of the big mistakes that people make every time they do their taxes. We don't want you to make those mistakes this year. Boy, taxes are just complicated enough. Next hour, we have my friend Andy Heller coming back in. Andy is a very successful real estate investor, and he and his partner are out there now buying like crazy. They just bought a commercial property. They're doing other kinds of investing. I thought you would really benefit from hearing how he is financing those purchases and where he is finding these amazing deals. That's next hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. Have you signed up for my free weekly newsletter yet? Well, if not, go over to my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up on any page while you're there. Check out eCredible. If you have no credit or a very thin credit file, you're probably finding it very difficult to actually get any sort of mortgage or an auto loan. Maybe your kids are just getting out of school. eCredible can help. Check it out through my website at thinkglink.com. So we're talking tax this hour with Bill Nemeth, Chet Burgess, and Mary Brody. They are all enrolled agents. Bill, until June, is president of the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. Chet is the executive director of that association. Mary is just an enrolled agent. So she's such a slacker. Seriously, we wanted to get you in early because there have been some changes on sort of the state side, Georgia side, but also there's some stuff going on nationally. It's not one of these really huge years, but there's enough little niggling detail stuff going on in this election year that could make a difference between whether you get a refund or not, frankly. So let's start this hour by, or this half hour, by talking a little bit about some of the mistakes that people make. And I know this trips up people all the time. But what are some, just I know for myself, you know, they used to say, well, make sure you write your Social Security number correctly. Make sure you don't use pencil. Make sure you copy your home address correctly. Those are the easy ones. What else? What are the mistakes? Bill and Mary, I know you guys, Chad, you guys must do 10 or 15,000 returns together. What mistakes do you see?
Well, I'm seeing one that I'd like to make people aware of. We all know that Roth IRAs are really cool. You don't get a tax benefit when you put them down, you know, for any particular year. But when you then cash them in, they are tax-free. The problem is nobody is putting them down on their tax return. And so the basis, the money you put into your Roth IRA, is never showing up on a Form 8606. And so if you fast forward a few years to when you're pulling money out, no 8606 with any basis, it says the Roth is fully taxable. So what we have done is for people who, number one, will pull transcripts, which is to say we'll look at their IRS records, and occasionally we'll have a middle-aged person who said, oh my God, I forgot I had that IRA. So we're finding money for people, number one.
That's nice.
Number two, we can go back 10 years very easily in the IRS database, and we can actually reconstruct their Roth contributions per year and actually give them a very accurate basis so that when they pull the Roths out, number one, if they're younger than 59 and a half and they started it over 5 years ago, they can pull out their own money with no penalties. And number two, when they are pulling out earnings and so on and they've achieved retirement age, they're then getting the full and maximum benefit of having a Roth.
All right. So how do you fill out this form? It's 8606. What are you supposed to be putting on it every year?
Well, that's part of, if you're using tax software, it will ask you, have you done an IRA or a Roth IRA? And your software should then be taking your contribution. If you're 50 and below, it is $5,000 max per year. If you're above 50, you get the catch-up, which is $6,000 per year. And you're basically keeping track of how much money you've secreted away that is going to be tax-free when you pull it out. It's the basis, how much money you put in.
I love the idea that you're finding money for people and they've simply forgotten about these accounts. It goes back to just sort of basic personal finance stuff, which is to try and keep everything all in the same place, folks, so you don't forget about it.
Absolutely.
Important.
Indeed.
What other mistakes are you seeing, Chet? What's coming across your desk with any sort of regularity?
The basis tracking we've gotten into is something that affects, you know, not just retirement accounts, but people who are real estate investors,
mm-hmm.
and people who are business owners who have assets that they're depreciating. I frequently pick up new clients who did not claim their depreciation deduction, and weren't even really aware that they could take a deduction each year of part of the cost, say, of buying that rental house. And so we have to go back, as Bill said, look at the prior year's returns, maybe even the IRS transcripts of the returns, figure out what they didn't claim, and catch them up. The good news is if you miss depreciation write-offs, you can claim it all potentially in one tax year.
Ooh.
Up to a certain amount, which can actually, again, talking about found money, if you have someone who owned a rental property, didn't claim depreciation for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, they've got $25,000 of depreciation, 25% tax bracket could save them $5,000. And if they're filing early enough to get that $5,000 refund, they can use it for an IRA contribution before April 17th. So
that's actually kind of nice as well. Of course, when you if you take the depreciation and then you sell the property not to a 1031, you will pay tax. You'll have to catch that back up.
Exactly. Yeah, you'll have a recapture even if you didn't take the write-off. The IRS, the code language says depreciation allowed or allowable will be factored in when you sell it.
Wow, so you better take it, because if you don't take it, that's silly. That's lost money.
If you don't take it, you'll lose twice.
Nice. Love that. Mary, what are some mistakes that you're seeing?
Well, just to segue onto what Chet said, people will use software to do their taxes, and they'll often miss the depreciation because they just don't understand it or they just don't want to fuss with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often how they leave out the depreciation by design, for the most part, because they just don't want to deal with it. But a thing that also happens is mortgage interest. When you have a small business that's out of the home, you are allowed to use an office and home form and claim some portion of the mortgage interest and property taxes on that form. That's all well and good. It's a Form 8829. But if you're not careful in most of the package software, you'll double dip. You'll forget, or the software will allow you to re-enter the mortgage interest again for Schedule A purposes for your itemized deductions. And suddenly you've claimed way more interest expense than is allowed. And the IRS can catch this. They have a record through those transcripts, and your mortgage company reported it to them.
Yuck. So you don't want to do that.
Right.
You're counting on the software to get it right.
Right. And it's because they don't, well, they really may not be familiar enough with the software to know that they put it in one place, they don't have to put it in another, but they're not always careful with that, and they'll double dip.
Oh. Well, that's not good at all.
Yeah.
Are you seeing I know that before the show we were talking about the tax software, and you were saying that you've been finding some other kinds of problems with it. What else are you finding? Because more and more people are doing these electronic returns. The IRS said, 70-something percent of people are now doing some sort of electronic filing, which is, it's good. It's cheaper for the IRS. Supposedly you get fewer mistakes, though maybe not. But what are some of your issues when you look at these kinds of forms?
Well, Bill had a good one the other day. A fella came to us because of an audit, and he'd been using TurboTax every year for the last 5 years, but every year his estimates on things got a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger, and there wasn't anybody standing over his shoulder tapping him saying, you know, you've claimed too much for this. Unfortunately, the software will allow you to do things that are not legal, Mm-hmm. And it won't just immediately throw up a red flag at you and say, no, 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 you can't do that. And people will get themselves into trouble with that.
That's sort of interesting. So when you say his estimates got bigger and bigger, what do you mean by that?
They keep moving the boundaries. The first year, they took a little bit of education credit at a master's level. The second year, they took a lot more. And in fact, the education they were getting was offshore. It was not qualifying education.
Oh.
And every year, they just kept taking more and more because they'd never been audited. So, you know, they start taking north of 20 grand of education as a non-reimbursed business expense, and they got this hand burner of a letter that says, you owe us 12 grand unless you can prove the following. And I looked at it for about a day, and I called the guy back and said, your return is so optimistic, you should do nothing because you're going to owe 25 grand if you fix it. Just take what they said and leave it go.
Wow.
And to pick up on that, I see some people, usually new clients coming in, who obviously don't understand that the IRS can audit their return and ask to see their receipts, and allocationally get a little one business questionnaire sheet where every expense is in round numbers with two zeros on the end. And I'll email the client back and I'll say, you know what that tells the IRS if you put that on your return? Either you're guessing, you know, you're estimating, or you're just flat out fudging. And that's a screaming audit flag. Don't do that.
Too much rounding. And also, if you wanted to talk about audit flags, somebody who's self-employed uses a code, as for their business, 99999. And what that tells the IRS is, that's the code that's called unclassified.
Yeah.
And it says to the IRS, if you don't know what business you're in by choosing the right number, how are you expecting us to know what business you're in? And it's just an audit flag.
You know, it's kind of interesting. We were assigned, our business was, one of our businesses was assigned just kind of a, you know, a code, and it was kind of the wrong code. And so we would get these requests during the year for kind of income verification that just didn't make any sense. It was as if I was a performer, like a stage performer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we couldn't figure out why we kept getting this stuff, and I would hand it off to Sam. But, well, you fill it out. He goes, no, you have to fill it out. But it was like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. They would ask these questions and be like, this doesn't make any sense to me. We figured out that the number had just gotten, it was one off. Like the original accountant, when we still had an accountant for the business when we were setting it up, had chosen some sort of code, and it was one digit off. And so when we changed that, it took a couple of years for it to take with the IRS. I think they thought we were like, you know, like, what? You don't know what business you're in either? But, you know, it turned out that, you know, now we don't get those crazy forms in the middle of the year. We're like, what is this? And yeah, so just very important to know.
Your expenses just didn't match the code. You were an outlier. Yeah,
but you are a radio star.
Right.
Absolutely.
In the firmament of Sunday mornings at WSB. We are doing our tax show, everybody. We've got Bill Nemeth and Chet Burgess and Mary Brody, our good friends, who are enrolled agents with the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents. If you're interested in finding an enrolled agent to ask a question, you can go to the number 4GAEA.org. Number 4GAEA.org. When we come back, we are going to do a little wrap up with tax. And then coming up next hour, my good friend Andy Heller is stopping by to share all kinds of amazing information about investing in real estate. He and his partner are out there buying up strip centers and commercial buildings and houses about as fast as they can organize the financing. Stay tuned for that and more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinklink.com and check out the finance blog, Equifax Finance Blog. Just go to Equifax.com and click on Finance Blog. and find all kinds of great information. So this has been a good hour, but I definitely think we need a little bit more tax in our life. We have had with us this hour Bill Nemeth, Chet Burgess, and Mary Brody, all of them enrolled agents. You can find Bill online, WG Nemeth, N-E-M-E-T-H, at AOL.com. Chet Burgess is Chet Burgess, B-U-R-G-E-S-S, at BrookwoodTax.com. And you can find Mary at Mary Brody, M-E-R-R-Y-B-R-O-D-I-E, at TaxDoctorInc.com. If that's too tough to write that down while you're driving, please don't run off the road. I'm going to put it up on my website, and you'll be able to find it there on today's blog post. But we have something else for you, because we do need some more tax advice. We thought Easter Sunday would be a great day to have Bill, Chet, and Mary come back to answer your tax questions, because, of course, we never actually got to your questions today. Easter Sunday, whether you're driving to church, from church, you know, drive time to church, happy to do that. As Mary, what was that you like to, how do you like to put it exactly?
Well, they can listen in and they can get right with God and get right with the IRS.
I just love that. All right, so we hope you're going to join us. It is on April 8th, on Easter Sunday, here with Bill, Chet, and Mary. So stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us
so much.
Well, we really appreciate it. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Coming up next, we have my good friend Andy Heller talking about investing in real estate and all the different kinds of property and deals that he is finding out there. Stay tuned for that. I'm Elise Klink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. My website, thinklink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter and head on over to the Equifax Finance blog, where you can get great information about the five pillars of personal finance: credit, tax, insurance, real estate, and investing. And also take advantage of our new section, Family Finance. There is all kinds of really interesting information on family finance about things that you can do to better manage your family's finances. Save money, spend a little bit smarter, all kinds of good stuff. All that at the Equifax Finance blog. So on the phone with us today, all the way from Nashville, is my good friend Andy Heller. He is a long-time real estate investor who, along with his partner Scott, has bought dozens of properties. He's a big fan of sort of buying and holding, but he also likes lease with options to buy. I'm sure we're going to hear all about that. He also is the co-founder of RealtyJoin, RealtyJoin.com. It is an amazing website if you are involved in the real estate industry as a broker, a plumber, a painter, a buyer, a seller, an accountant, you name it. If you do something with real estate, you want to be on this site. It's a great networking site, place for all kinds of people in the real estate industry to meet each other, share information, share business, build their business, RealtyJoin.com. Andy, welcome back to the program.
Elise, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really nice to have you. So I was amazed when you were in Chicago a couple of weeks ago and we sat down for breakfast, you were telling me that you have never found a better time to buy real estate than now, and you've been doing it for a couple of decades.
I've been doing it for a long time, and it gives me a real appreciation for what's happening right now in this economy and what's happening from an investor's perspective. Elise, this is for investors, this is a pipe dream, and it's not going to last forever. And I'm seeing deals out there that I could only dream about years ago. So this is an investment.
What kind of deals? You say you're finding deals you would have dreamed about years ago. Give me an example.
I'll do exactly that. I'll give you an example. Last property I had under contract, and the property conservatively, once I've done the rehab, would appraise in the high 160s. The acquisition cost was 92, needs about 10, and it's in a great school district in Atlanta. So this is like a 35 to 40% margin, depending on how we do the rehab. And, you know, typically, at least in a stable market, I've bought properties 15, 20% margin. So this is what I mean by it's a very, very good market for investors. You can get discounts if you're buying right at levels that we won't see again in a short while.
All right, so you bought the property for $92,000. You think when you're all done with it, you can sell for $160,000. When you're all in, you're going to be just about at $102,000, $103,000. That's a big profit. That's, you know, $50,000-$60,000 if you flip it. What if you rent it out? Would you be able to make more money renting?
Yeah, well, what I do is lease with an option to buy, and it's a bit of a unique twist on this concept, and basically that involves you find somebody who wants the home, wants to stay in the neighborhood. They don't really quite want a rental because they really want some of their lease payments or a rent payment to apply to something, but they're not ready to buy. They can't yet get a good loan. So we seek out people like that, Elise, and then you contract for them, give them the right to buy over a certain period of time. We like 3 years, and when they buy, there's no real estate commission. So the typical home buyer under a lease option would hopefully buy this property 2 or 3 years going forward and pay in the high 160s. If you did flip the property, you have to be fair. We have to assume that we have to give a discount to a quick sale buyer. You'd flip that same property for somewhere between 130 and 140. People ask me which I prefer. They're both great options. You know, one is a good option to create some quick cash for the investors who need that, and one is an option to make a little bit of more money, but it pushes the return into the future a little bit.
So let's talk a little bit about how you found this great deal, because, you know, we've people call the show all the time. How do I find a real estate deal? Do I use an agent? Do I just call the REO company? How do you and Scott go and find these great deals?
Well, there's lots of ways to do that. So I'm not an investor who's going to say you have to do it this way or you have to do it that way. There's lots of, as long as you're able to buy the property below market, everybody, honestly, it doesn't matter how you're acquiring. My favorite way to acquire is to buy bank-owned property. And for smaller banks, when I say smaller, I mean local banks and regional banks, it's possible to approach the bank right after the foreclosure sale or the auction and to make what we call a quick sale offer. Some of the larger banks, that's not really possible, Elise. So what you want to do there is work with a network of real estate agents. We call these agents REO agents. And these are agents that typically get the bank listings, so you build a relationship with these people, and such that they're the ones that you're on their short list. The people, one of the investors that they will call when they have a property that they want to move fast, or they have a directive from the bank to sell some of their properties quickly.
Let me just clarify for everybody listening at home. You would find these people. How would you find an REO agent? Would you go driving around and you look for REO signs? Are you looking for, what are you looking for exactly?
No, you have to basically network, and that's something we teach. There's no real short answer to that, but what I can tell you is that they are easy to be found. What you don't do is call off these signs, because frankly, any real estate agent today will tell you they're an REO agent, just because any real estate agent who has a series of listings are going to have a lot of bank-owned property. But when I say REO agent, Elise, what I mean are specifically the, in most metropolitan areas like in Atlanta here, you got about 15 or 20 agents dominate almost the entire market for REOs. They are the agents that if Bank of America gets a listing on the west side of town, they're going to call one or two agents. And once you find these agents, and I'll say that finding them is actually not difficult, then the key is to approach them in such a way that they'll give you a chance. And you don't need to be an experienced investor. You just need to be able to say the right thing to demonstrate that you have an ability to transact, either with your money or with another partner's money, and they'll give you a chance. And once you've bought the first property from these sources, whether they're banks or REO agents, one of the great things is that you build a relationship that you can nurture for years. And that's been one of the secrets that Scott and I have, is that we've never put a lot of time into investing, but we have like three or four contacts that we call whenever we want to buy property, or they call us, and we buy from them over and over again. So that's why we like buying from banks, is because the sellers, be it institutions or these agents that have the bank-owned properties, always have the ability to sell you multiple properties over a number of years. So you just need to get these handful of contacts, and then you can buy from them over and over.
Now, I should mention that you're doing a real estate event coming up. When is it? It's coming up pretty soon, right?
Yeah, it's the weekend of April 28th in Atlanta, and it's a full weekend. We talk about how to find property the way that I have just been talking about, also how to finance these properties, either if you have your own money or you have to go outside to outside sources. Then finally, what to do with the property once you have it. And if it's okay, Elise, I'd like to tell people where they can go to if they want to register for
the
event.
Sure, what's the website for it?
Yes, www.realestateevent.info. Info, www.realestateevent.info. You can register. The event is free. We ask for just a small deposit so we can tell the hotel how many people to expect, and we refund the deposit once you show up. And you know a lot about me, Elise. You know that my style, and I like to teach. I like to try to help some people make some money, and it's a great time, and that's what we're going to do.
You've been teaching all over the country for a long, long time. So,
yes.
And you've also written a book, Buy Low, Sell High, I think is the name of it.
Yeah. We've written a couple of books.
And, written a couple of books, right?
And by Fortune magazine, so hopefully I'll have a chance to show you guys why.
All right. So when you're one of the questions that we get all the time on the show is, I can't get financing. How do I get financing? So you hear this, you know, noise that Fannie and Freddie will allow you to buy up to 10 properties, including your primary residence. But when you get to the banks, they're only going to let you do 4, and sometimes they'll only let you do 2. So how do you get around the idea that the lenders, who are supposed to be the conduits to Fannie and Freddie, aren't going to let you borrow as much money as you maybe want to?
Well, that's a really good question. So I'm going to answer this as simply as I can. It's a question that I'll be spending like about an hour on that weekend. But here's the short and sweet of that. If you are an individual and you have reasonably good credit, then what you can do is you can get an investor loan. You'll need to have a little bit of money for a down payment. You'll need to have a job. And that's the way Scott and I bought most of our properties for our first 12 years. We were employed, and we used the credit we built with our jobs to go and get good financing. And once you reach a certain number, and that number is changing, Elise, and so that's why I don't like to say you can only buy a certain amount, because Fannie and Freddie and Uncle Sam continue to revise these numbers and these limitations. But once you reach a certain amount, investors like me, we get creative. You can do like blanket loans or portfolio loans, commercial loans and residential properties. You go outside and use private money, or use somebody else who is essentially your financing partners. And that's how people who seeking to buy lots of properties, how they go out and buy that 15th, 20th, 30th property. For investors who do not have a lot of cash, what they do is they go out and they, it's a terminology in the investing world we call private money. You seek partners. Partners that come up with the funds for your down payment, your earnest money, and sometimes even to be the signatory on the loan. And what I will say is that while there's always going to be challenges in every market to do that, right now you have a special opportunity because there's so few options out there for people who have money that can really bring a nice rate of return. The stocks are quite risky. You can't you put money in CDs and money markets, you're not going to get a very strong return. So that's one of the things that has made real estate so appealing to people who have funds. They are now, if you approach them the right way, the goal is to get them to give you a chance to find a property for them. And in my opinion, there's been no better time to do that than now.
Now, one of the things that I am hearing from lenders is that they want to see 30% down, 25 to 35% down, sometimes more in some cases for investors. Are you seeing that as well, or has that number shifted downward as well?
That number, again, I buy a little bit differently, Elise, but the number last time I checked was 20%.
Okay, so yeah. 20% isn't horrible.
No, it's not. It's not. And you know, you and I have talked about this. People who have funds, there's a real lack of investment opportunities, and that's the angle you want to take. If you're not going to be using your own funds, you need to be able to go out to the community of people that you know and that you don't know and try to get them to help you out for that first property or two. And once you get the first one or two under your belt, then it becomes a much easier to get people to come up with even more money.
Got it. So once you start, you get going. We have with us on the phone Andy Heller. good friend of mine. He's been buying and selling, as you can tell, investment real estate for a very long time. He's the president of RealtyJoin.com. It's a social networking site for everybody in the real estate industry. I've been involved in it. You'll see my shining face, my little smile on there. He is also teaching a free real estate event. There's a small upfront donation, but it gets refunded once you get there. RealEstateEvent.info. RealEstateEvent. Three words, all together, one word, realestateevent.info. Andy, will you stick around? I've got a few more questions for you.
Great.
All right. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned for more information about investing in real estate next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com. I have real estate investor and RealtyJoin.com president Andy Heller on the phone with me this hour. We're talking about investing in real estate because Andy tells me that there has never and never will be a better time than right now to buy and invest in real estate. Andy, when you look out over the last couple of years, what was your favorite deal that you've done and why?
Well, it's tough to pinpoint the exact favorite one, Elise, but when I do lease options, we're actually sort of get involved in trying to help people. I know it sounds a bit corny, but many people are trying to repair their credit, and they achieve the American dream of owning a home. And there was a family that came to us, and this was, goodness, like, I guess, 8 years ago, and they were a wonderful family, and we had bought a bank-owned property, and we marketed for sale or lease option. Nobody came to buy it, and we did a lease option. And at the end of the 3 years, they were not ready to buy. They couldn't get a good loan. And had we kicked them out, Elise, because contractually we could have done this, we would have made a lot more money, and we gained them an extension. And 3 years after that, it took them 3 years, a three-year extension. So after 6 years, they bought the home, and they were so touched. I mean, they knew that we could have made more money by kicking them out, and they knew that we were on our contractual rights to do that. But they wrote just one of the most moving thank you letters to me. And here we are, we're investors, we're here to make money, we are making some very good money. We get a thank you letter from somebody.
That's pretty moving. Yeah, that's a pretty special thing to have somebody change somebody's life for the better and make sure that they're in a place, a home, where they can be safe and they can raise their kids and truly have a new start. That's amazing. Well,
yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about real estate when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody. We are talking to Andy Heller, real estate investor. He runs RealtyJoin.com, a great social networking site for the real estate industry. All that and more coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, the website thinkglink.com. thinkglink.com. If you are listening to the show and you're hearing us talk about investing in real estate and you're thinking to yourself, I don't even have the credit to qualify for a loan, you may want to go to my website and check out eCredible, or you can just go to eCredible.com/glink, G-L-I-N-K. eCredible helps people who have very little credit or no credit. And what you do is you go through their program, and then they will – what you get out of that is something that you can now work with a real lender. They work with Churchill Mortgage, which is one of Dave Ramsey's absolute favorite lenders. And you can go there with your eCredible credit score, and they will give you a loan. That is how that works. So go to my website, thinkglink.com, click on the eCredible box that's right there on the right side of the homepage, and you should get a tremendous amount of information about what to do, build your credit, all the rest. 404-872-0750. Andy Heller is still with us. He is a longtime real estate investor. I have known him for a very long time as well. Not as long as he's been investing in real estate, but He is also the president of Realty Join, which is a social networking site for the real estate industry. Great thing to do if you're not already on Realty Join. It's free, and it's a great way for people who work in the real estate industry to get to know each other, find new clients, generate some new business. He is also an active speaker about real estate investing. His next event is coming up. When is it, Andy? It's at the end of April, right?
End of April, yep.
End of April, April 28th, I think you said.
Yes.
Realestateevent.info. Realestateevent.info. You can go there and sign up for his program on April 28th. So, Andy, when you look out at the different kinds of deals you're looking at, I know you just bought a commercial property. You buy a lot of residential stuff. How does it change when you're buying commercial property or a strip center, an office building? What are some of the other things you want to be looking for? Because you're not going to do a lease with an option to buy for those. It works a little bit differently. How do you think about the numbers?
Well, you can't do a lease with option to buy on most. I actually did on this commercial property that I purchased a lease. But what you need to look at is cash flow. And the you also need to look at the business that you can run out of there. I mean, is this a business that you feel can make money in this economy? Is this something that is fairly recession-proof? And are you prepared to do it? So commercial investing, I think, takes on an entirely different element of risk and also some very good return. But what I like about residential is that no matter what happens in the economy, people always need a place to live. So you need to be sort of an economist if you start investing in commercial. You need to make sure that the purchase makes sense, that you're prepared to be a landlord. If you're not, you can hire a company that knows that leasing business. And you need to familiarize yourself with the type of business that would need to be run ideally out of the property that you're buying. So you got a lot more involved analysis there, Elise. And then you have to basically look at cash flow, look at vacancy, likely turnover. It's much more complex than investing in residential property.
So why do it? Because I know you just bought a commercial property. What was it about the deal that made it so compelling that you couldn't say no?
Well, interestingly enough, my commercial property was a quasi-residential property, Elise. It was a small personal care center. So it was a home that actually has 10 bedrooms and 5 bathrooms. So I felt pretty comfortable making that leap into commercial because it was still in an area that I was fairly comfortable with. So for me, commercial is something I'm not especially comfortable with. I do have friends, investors, who will tell you the opposite. that is their comfort window. And again, I don't think that one way is better than the other, but it does represent different risks and a lot more factors that an investor would need to consider before they should pull the plug.
So tell me a little bit about how did you find this property? Was it through one of your agent friends who does a lot of your residential stuff? She said, I have a residential property, but it's a little bigger than normal.
No, this one I found a very different way. I ran an ad. Investor seeking property, investor with cash. And I got, from this ad, I've got, I'd say, for every 20 phone calls, one would be an opportunity. So you have to really try and weed out what sounds good, what doesn't. And I went to see a few, and this one I saw the property. I saw what the guy was asking, and I ran my numbers. I saw what the property needed, and I said, this is a no-brainer. So I was comfortable enough to venture a little bit into commercial. And the fact that it was still a home on a large lot, but a home like the many homes I bought in the past, I felt pretty comfortable with it, Elise.
Okay, so when you put out the ad, this really intrigues me because, you know, you've got to be prepared. You got to put your cell phone number in. You got to be prepared for a ton of calls that just aren't going to make any sense. How do you sort through that? How do you know when a call is good or not? Do you and Scott have kind of a geographical area that you like to buy in, and so anything out of that is automatically discounted? Do you have certain price ranges? Everything else is discounted. How do you think about that?
A lot of things you look for, but geography, absolutely. Certain areas I won't even consider. So that can eliminate a whole chunk of calls right away.
Do you eliminate them because you just don't want to go there? It's too far? It doesn't make sense to you? Why do you eliminate them?
A lot of things. Certain areas that I'm not comfortable investing, I don't invest in areas that don't have good schools, that aren't what I call stable middle-income areas. I don't invest in areas that are more than a 45-minute drive from my primary residence, because I want to be able to manage the properties properly.
Mm-hmm.
What I look for is stable middle-income areas, and as hopefully most of your listeners know Atlanta fairly well, I've gone as far north as Woodstock, as far west as Austell, as far south as Fayetteville, as far east as Covington.
Okay, so, wait, I just have to say, so you're clearly marking this with no traffic. This is, when you say 45 minutes from your house, you're saying definitely a no traffic thing.
I'm absolutely saying no traffic.
Because that could be an hour and 45 minutes just to get up to Woodstock on a bad day.
Yeah, if you leave at the wrong time. So I'm assuming that you leave at the very, very strategic time, everybody. Not during rush hour.
Sounds good. So when you're actually out there and you're getting these calls in, what are some of the things that, you know, you're listening for? I mean, you're listening for location. Are you listening for price?
Absolutely. And you're trying to determine very quickly with calls like this, is the person you're talking to, are they realistic? Are they pie in the sky? Or were it, you know, what... Ask them some basic questions, neighborhood, ask them price, market value, what the property needs. And it's amazing how many people will sort of shoot themselves in the foot within the first few minutes. I mean, everybody wants you to come out and look at their property, but unfortunately, you know, we're not in a business of charity. It's investing, and you're trying to determine, is there a margin there? Does the property appear to have a margin? And if it's in a good area, if it fits what I normally buy, and it appears to have a margin, I'm going to get in the car. I made an exception with this property because the margin was so significant that we were talking on the phone. I knew what the guy told me what he wanted. He told me a past appraisal he had. I ran some numbers. I'm like, I've got to see this property. So I actually called somebody who had more familiarity with those types of properties, and I asked him to meet me there. And a few days later, I bought my first commercial property.
So I have to say, this idea of building a team is kind of important, and you've talked about this almost every time I've had you on the show, and you know, you've come to a bunch of my different events, and we've talked about this idea of building a team. But it seems to me that this idea of building a team where you could call somebody who had more experience and say, can you meet me there? You've got your real estate attorney, you've got, you know, lenders that you regularly work with, the real estate agents you regularly work with. It seems like there are a whole lot of people involved that you've now been working with, and you've built this team that are there, you know, even with the tax questions you might have, they're there to make it easier for you.
Elise, I couldn't have said it any better, and as you know, that's the concept behind what we're trying to do at Realty Join, is to create an ability for investors to build that team, but also online. And yes, I mean, I would say, Elise, after 20 years of investing, I probably have 500 names, I don't have a Rolodex anymore, but 500 names in my phone, of which 100 I've got a phone call or an email, I've consulted with them within the last 2 years, and of which 50 I talk to almost every year. So the great thing about real estate is that if you surround yourself with these team members, and they almost all of them are, they're willing to help, they want your business, it can really help it. Give you the confidence you need to succeed and enable your ability to be successful. But real estate is that one field that you can't do it on your own, everybody. You've got to have good contacts, good advisors, and if you build that, they're going to help you make more money and also sometimes keep you from making a mistake.
All right, so let's talk about your mistakes. What's a mistake that you made this year? Because I know you don't do it perfectly every time. Nobody could. So did you make a mistake this year?
This year I've actually done pretty good.
Okay, last year.
I bought a property a few years ago in a neighborhood, and I bought it from another investor. And I will never buy another property from another investor.
Why?
Why? Because a lot of investors cut corners. And while the property inspected okay, I just found that I had significant significantly more rehab and repair work to this home in the years after I purchased this, Elise, and I think it's because that particular investor neglected it. So I made, you're never too old to learn a lesson, and here I am, I'm 49 now, and just a handful of years ago, I made a new rule for myself, never buy an investment property from another investor if he's owned it for a number of years.
All right, so that's one good thing. What else, what other mistakes have you made, or what lessons have you learned? We'll put it that way.
Don't take shortcuts, everybody. One time I skipped an inspection on a property, and I'm a very conservative investor. I believe in being extremely careful. This was a unique situation. I skipped the inspection because the property was empty. Essentially, the inside, the builder went bankrupt. The outside was done. The inside was an empty shell. And I thought, there's nothing to inspect. You know, there's no toilets, there's no heat and air yet. Those are things I had to go ahead and put into their property. So I skipped the inspection phase. Now, I did walk the property with my contractor, Elise, but I skipped the inspection phase. I said, I don't want to spend $500. Why should I do that? And turned out, I mean, I still made money on the property, but I didn't make as much money because one of the things I learned after I bought the property is that the electrician had probably gone back because he didn't get paid by the builder and sabotaged the work. All the wires were cut in the wall. Now, visually, you couldn't figure this out, but under an inspection, when they try to run current, you would have figured this out. And all of my offers are contingent upon inspection, and the inspection requires the bank to activate the utilities. So this is a great example of here's a seasoned investor like me. Taking a shortcut, why spend the money? Don't take shortcuts, everybody. Shortcuts always cost you money.
Wow, that's so painful. what property did you make the biggest return on? And we just have about a minute left, but I know that everybody's going, what is his biggest win?
The biggest win is a property we still own. It's a property, it's the second bank-owned property we ever bought. And this was 19 years ago, Elise. The family was on a three-year lease, and when they didn't buy, we rolled the property, the lease agreement, into a series of automatic one-year renewals. We put it on a 15-year lease, 15-year note, so today we owe nothing. The same family's been in there for 19 years, Elise.
Wow.
So I can't give you profit yet, everybody, because it hasn't sold. But if you take the value of the property, cash flow, tax benefits, this middle income property that would not appraise today for $140,000, we've made over $200,000.
Amazing.
Yeah. And we're still making. We're clearing about $900 a month. This every time I feel sad, I just think about this property, I smile.
Andy Heller, longtime real estate investor, good friend of mine. He's the president of RealtyJoin.com. You've heard him talk about it. I've talked about it. Go join that. If you're in real estate, go join, go network, hang out, meet people, build your business. On the 28th of April, he's hosting an event, realestateevent.info, www.realestateevent.info. Go there, sign up. He's great. Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
Elise, anytime you want me, just call. It's a pleasure.
All right. All right, everybody, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, just a few final thoughts as we round up the evening. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Everybody to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. I would give you our number, but as you can probably hear from the music, it is the end of the show. We have run out of time. It was so great talking to Bill and Mary and Chet, all of them, the enrolled agents. We got a lot of great tax advice in the first hour of the show. Hope that was helpful to you. Remember, they're coming back on Easter Sunday. On your way to church, there and back, or as Mary said, get right with God, then get right with the IRS. We'd love to have you join us on Easter Sunday, so that's coming up. Andy Heller, don't forget to go to his website, realestateevent.info, realestateevent, one word, .info, and you can sign up for his event. Go there and find out all about how he does real estate investing. He has been very, very successful with it. You can find me online all the time at thinkglink.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Collectors, they ring my phone.